Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, January 14th. I hope you're safe, COVID-free, and keeping your distance from your unvaxxed and unmasked family, friends, and neighbors. They're killing us. Now you know where I stand. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about digital health technology funding levels and digital health technology mergers and acquisitions. There seems to be an awful lot of both of that at the moment. To tell us what it all means for the rest of the digital health technology year are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning, Dave?
It's a new year. It's an exciting time in healthcare. I'm raring to go and talk about health tech investing and innovation.
All right. Sounds great. Julie, how about you?
It's been a little bit sunny in Seattle, and I still don't have COVID, so it's been a good week.
Yeah, that is the litmus test, isn't it? All right. Now, before we talk about digital health tech funding and all the wheeling and dealing that's going on, I wanted to ask you briefly about your new tech toys. Dave, did Santa bring you any new electronic gadgets this year? And if so, do you like them so far, or have you returned them already?
Santa gave me a lump of coal, Dave. I tend to keep my products for a long time, so my two cars have cassette decks. If they were people, they could legally drink. So anyway, my iPhone 7 crapped out on me right before Christmas. It lost wireless connectivity, and without wireless connectivity, you can't make phone calls. So after a non-productive phone session, Apple sent me to the Genius Bar. The Genius Tech informed me they had a fix for my phone, but it was too old to qualify. Yeah, like me, I'm too old to qualify. I tried to buy a new iPhone 13 Pro, but they didn't have one in stock. So then my Genius Tech sent me to the Verizon store across the street, but it was closed. Here's my favorite part. I love Apple, but I gave this service visit a crappy review. And to his credit, the store manager called me to follow up, but my non-working phone couldn't receive the voicemail message. But there's a happy ending to the story. I did get the iPhone I wanted, and that's when I discovered the voicemail message from the Apple store manager. So Merry Christmas to all.
That's a great tale. Great holiday story. They'll make a cartoon out of that, probably. Julie, how about you? Did Santa bring you any new devices this year that you're learning how to use or that are still in the box?
Well, we must be some slow adopters on this call because I am the last person, I think, on the planet who uses an iPhone who doesn't have some sort of AirPod. So I got some AirPod Pros and I was super excited to get them, and they are sitting in the unopened box on my desk. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we are slow adopters. Santa brought me a new iPad. I was still using a Generation 2 that I got in 2012. This one is a Generation 9, so obviously I skipped a few. It's like switching from a horse to a car. I get to where I need to go a lot faster, but I'm not sure what buttons I'm hitting, so we'll see how that works out. All right, speaking of better technology, let's talk first about digital health funding. Rock Health released its year-end digital health report that said digital health technology companies attracted a record $29.1 billion in funding last year. That's nearly double the previous record of $15 billion in 2020. And in its year-end report, Startup Health said global health innovation funding hit a record $44 billion last year, and that's double the previous record of $22 billion set in 2020. Dave, other than wishing you had started a digital health company, what's your takeaway from these two reports, and what does it tell you about the year ahead?
I regularly look forward to reading both the Rock Health and Startup Health year-end reports and analysis. Both started tracking digital tech back in 2011 when it was on nobody's radar screen to speak of. So each report has a long-term perspective and a wealth of information and trend analysis. Rock Health's report focuses only on the U.S. As you mentioned, Startup also includes non-U.S. activity, which is actually becoming more important. 2021 was a watershed year for digital health tech. Everything got much bigger, deal sizes, raises, exits, transaction volume. Rather than assemble the parts into a coherent story, I'm just going to make a series of observations. You covered the headline, Dave. The level of health tech investing doubled both domestically and globally from 2020 to 21. After doubling between 2019 and 2020, that means it's gone up 3x in the last 2 years. Up and up the investing goes, where it stops, .. Despite all the attention that on-demand and fintech investment receive, digital investments in biopharma led the pack, driven by the movement to decentralize clinical trials and gathering, quote, real-world evidence, unquote, from electronic medical records. So biopharma still wielding a very big stick. Mental health investing dwarfed investments in other clinical disease areas. It got $5.1 billion in 2021. The next highest was diabetes at $1.8 billion. For me, that's a really encouraging signal that mental health services are really beginning to achieve the potential of parity with physical care services. And I've always thought it was the dumbest thing in the world that we didn't treat mental and physical health with equal care. A rising tide lifts all boats. Digital health tech wasn't unique. Overall, U.S. venture investing almost doubled between 2020 and 2021 to $330 billion from $167 billion. Remember when Everett Dirksen said a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. Wow, it's going to be a trillion here, a trillion there. Digital health tech represented 9% of total venture investment in 21, about the same as 2020. So many new funds, so much money, so valuations are skyrocketing. Is it a bubble? Maybe yes, maybe no, definitely frothy. Consolidation is driving much of the increase in valuations as companies endeavor to offer more services and become more omnichannel. Also a big increase in exits. U.S. exits averaged 23 per month, more than double the 2020 average of 12. Some of that was driven by the rise of SPAC transactions, but acquisitions and IPOs were also robust. Speaking of SPACs, their dramatic rise and fall was a major story in 2021, as Julie mentioned last week. As a former investment banker, I've come to believe that financial engineering doesn't create value. It just moves the cash flows around by offering incremental benefits to certain parties at the expense of others. That reality, in my opinion, explains why SPACs came back down to the earth at the end of last year. Finally, infrastructure investing has become sexy, increasing threefold in 2021 to $2.2 billion across 40 deals, driven by an increasing demand for data liquidity and interoperability. A unified data ecosystem is healthcare's vision of the singularity, and we can't get there soon enough.
You had it, Dave. Thank you. Great rundown. Julie, will we continue to see more records broken this year, or do you think things will cool off a bit, and why?
Well, we're not even through the first quarter of this digital health investing game, and I know I'm a broken record on this, but, you know, until the end of the aughts, 2008, 2009, you know, you remember this, our entire healthcare system was almost entirely on paper. And by 2015, we had about 90% of the hospitals using EMRs, but not, you know, deeply or well. But now data is flowing and we're starting to see real technology enablement with a transaction-ready mindset. And Aaron Martin from Providence would always use this phrase, transaction-ready. Healthcare needs to be transaction-ready. And Dave just talked about the boring back office and the infrastructure and all the non-sexy stuff in the background. And when that stuff gets transaction ready, we're off to the races. So there's no doubt that healthcare remains an enormous opportunity for investors to drive innovation. But the question about whether funding sustains or grows in 2022 is largely a question of how long these tourist investors continue to participate. And it's tourists like Tiger and others who, you know, don't have specialized healthcare teams and are funding some companies at really aggressive terms with limited diligence. So though it's a huge opportunity, healthcare is still pretty idiosyncratic and requires some deep knowledge about the space and how it works and connections to sell in. So, you know, if the wind shifts on healthcare as a sector, or their investments start to underperform their expectations, we might see some pullback from those kinds of investors. But of course, the tried and true healthcare investors like us will still be there. And, you know, the other factor I look at is big macro regulatory drivers. And we've also talked about Medicare. Dave, I saw, and I can't believe this is actually true, but I guess it must be because I saw it in a report, but the U.S. company that won the top fundraise for 2021 was Devoted Health, which is squarely in the Medicare space. And I've seen, you know, many other reports talk about how 2020 will be the, you know, roaring boomer decade. So I think we have a lot of innovation left, and I could see us sustain this for a while.
Yeah. I like the word ats too. And Dave used the word frothy. That's another good word. All right. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
Well, I really like that point about moving from paper to electronic records. You know, there is this phenomenon called the technology paradox or the innovation paradox, where a new technology comes in and productivity actually goes down initially as the industry gets up to speed on the tech. It happened with personal computers in a big way. Everyone had one on their desks in the late 80s, but it really wasn't until the mid to late 90s that they caught fire. And I think that's what's happening in healthcare. We've had all of this investment in moving data around, and I think the industry is really starting to figure out how to use it. And healthcare had the added barrier that a lot of the big players were actively discouraging data liquidity. They gained value by protecting or hoarding the data to themselves. But the new interoperability regs, the new transparency regs have been a real fuel to broadening that. So that's just terrific. And I guess the other thing I'd say, you know, Devoted Health, that one I scratch my head on a little bit. They raised $1.2 billion. They're in the Medicare Advantage space. And so much of what's driving Medicare Advantage is the game playing on the front end to score people as sick as possible. And I just think the industry is going to clamp down on that. So if Devoted is going to be a long-term player, or any of the Medicare Advantage companies are going to be real long-term players, they're actually going to have to deliver on the care management.
Yeah. Well said. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. Now let's talk about all the big healthcare tech deals announced so far this year. And we're only 2 weeks into January. We have Verihole Health buying Castlight Health, Stryker buying Vocera Communications, Babylon buying Higi, R1 buying CloudMed, Aledade acquiring Iris Healthcare. I always like the name Iris. Medtronic buying Affera. And now I'm sure I missed some, and I'm sure some have been announced while we're doing this show. Julie, is this typical first of the year M&A activity, or is there something else going on here that says something more about what's happening in the market?
You know, even though JPM week, which is technically this week, typically sees a lot of announcements, this, like the healthcare IPO market, feels far more active than normal. So, you know, we have a few factors colliding that may be inspiring these first few weeks. First, as we all know, and have talked about already, the public markets have cooled off. The SPACs had their 15 minutes of fame. So large acquirers with big balance sheets can more easily swoop in and fold companies into their empire. And second, you know, I want to key off something that Dave said. You know, funding areas last year compared with 5 years ago saw funding levels that were just mind-bending. I mean, Dave talked about mental health. Companies who offered mental health care raised $5.1 billion in 2021. Now in 2017, that space raised $500 million. So it really is just unbelievable what's happening in these spaces. And when you get that much funding and you don't have that much consolidation, you know, you start to see a lot of roll-up happening. And I think we will see it in these clinical areas specifically. And we'll see it in other spaces, diabetes, cardiovascular, certainly MSK, oncology. We're already seeing it in primary care, that's for sure. But spaces like primary care are an interesting one because they kind of fit into the second way of looking at this funding, which is analyzing by value proposition category. So think research and development, on-demand healthcare, treatment of disease, health and fitness category Dave mentioned. You also see mind-blowing funding patterns in 2021 for those categories compared to the last 5 years. So when you look at it through that lens, you can see how the M&A over the last couple of weeks, these large players are potentially really upping their game in new and different strategic ways to compete in this next era of healthcare we have coming. So it's pretty exciting what can happen.
More to come, I'm sure. Dave, what common threads do you see in all these deals? As Julie alluded to, is it just the JP Morgan effect? Or is there something deeper here that tells you where the market's going?
Boy, am I glad I'm not at JP Morgan this year. I think that's why I was so happy at the beginning of the show. I look at investments as a leading indicator of where the marketplace is going, and ever so incrementally, ever so gradually, but ever so inevitably, healthcare in the US, which dominates the investment, is moving toward value-based care delivery and population health. So you're seeing consolidations in those spaces, the development of omni-channel platforms. 51% of US adults are in high deductible health plans, and they spent a record $500 billion last year on out-of-pocket expenses. That was an eighth of the total. So consumerism is going to be more and more at the forefront of healthcare investing and healthcare spending. And, you know, we're going to see payment models, and they already are, but I think the pace will increase. That's going to push much more toward outcomes and value. And it feels like if there is a common thread, when you look through this, it's like the industry is getting ready for this movement into value, finally. I mean, we're talking about it forever. And so in that context, I really liked the Aledade acquisition of Iris Health, the advanced care planning company, Babylon's acquisition of Higi. You know, Higi has those blood pressure monitors in every pharmacy in the country, it seems like. Vera Whole Health, its name says it all, its acquisition of Castlight there. These are the types of, Julie's term, value prop companies that are positioning to compete in a world that focuses on outcomes, costs, and prevention, as well as treatment. So I think that's all good. On the negative side, and I don't even know if it's negative, but on the negative side, I continue to be frustrated that the FDA doesn't have a cost-benefit component to its approvals. And it feels like some of these acquisitions in the biopharma sphere are so intricate in terms of disease treatments and so on, that once they get the FDA approval, these companies just go roaring into the market, and it's a buyer beware type behavior. And I felt that looking at some of the Medtronic acquisitions into very narrowly focused, with an ability to exploit pricing in a market where they have essentially monopoly pricing power. So I do hope at some point, there's no talk of this really, but that the FDA will get with the rest of the world and look at costs as well as the benefit or the efficacy of drugs and devices and other treatments they approve.
Yeah, it should all be about value to patients. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comment?
I think we might have mentioned this last week also, but didn't really dive into it. You know, one of the notable things happening or announced or sort of quasi-announced is IBM wanting to shed Watson. And IBM spent $4 billion building Watson, but it's really not able to compete in this world anymore and really hasn't been. So what I really continue to believe is that technology is starting to get very, very smart in healthcare. And Watson was born in an era when AI and technology were really cool ideas, and some of the big box leaders were the only ones who really thought they understood it. But we have a whole host of hundreds of companies who are really smart, nimble, and able to do things that, you know, IBM just wasn't able to do with Watson. So I think we're seeing winners in the big tech space, and unfortunately, Watson's not one of them.
Interesting. So ahead of its time, it's out.
Exactly.
That's great. Thanks, Julie. Yeah, it will be interesting to see if any of these deals create more value for patients. All of the companies say they will, but time will tell. Now let's talk about other big stories this past week. Julie, what other story caught your attention and why?
Well, I'm going to take this one about the federal government continuing to buy more and more COVID tests for people to take at home. And when you really listen to what's happening in this testing debate, the number of tests that the government can make available that it's purchased so far is just nothing compared to what some of the testing recommendations are coming out to really, you know, be mindful about Omicron and how you're interacting in the world. So I don't know that the federal government can fix this problem at this point.
Yeah, a supply and demand issue. Dave, what other stories should healthcare executives have paid attention to this week?
Well, I remember when Watson went to medical school. I guess Watson didn't graduate. The story that caught my attention, a bit of a Star Trek moment, although it's been coming for a long time. On January 10th in Baltimore, a patient received the first heart from a genetically altered pig, and it is ushering in a new era where organ transplants will be cultivated in pigs and other animals for placement in human beings. And you start to think about the implications of that, that we'll be able to buy replacement parts as we grow older. Pretty mind-bending.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I'll go with the CMS deciding to pay for the new Alzheimer's drug only for certain patients who are enrolled in clinical trials. So I thought that was a smart move because you want to see what real-world evidence to prove once and for all if this new drug works or it doesn't. So that made my list this week. All right. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment for the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.